This book justifies any lifestyle you want. Whoever told you life is supposed to be easy sold you a lie. All of your personal frustration, it comes from yourself. It doesn't come from other people. If you can believe things are certain to be terrible, why can't you believe that they're certain to succeed? Because this is just as likely.
Well, you have 30,000 events happening every single day. And so you should expect at least one miracle to happen to you per month. When I look at people who look back and complain or are constantly envious of other things, the more you're putting that out into the universe, the more you're going to keep receiving those same stories and the same circumstances. Like, you won't be able to get out of it.
Anyone who's like, let's say, overly saddened. You're overly saddened, sitting there like complaining. It's so hard to start a life. 1980s boomers had it so much easier. Well, are you gonna do something about this? You don't get to know how long bad times last, and you don't get to know when good times will come. So what is your plan to do something about it?
I'm gonna bet on humanity, because we have figured it out so many different times. It only takes 1% of the population to really figure something out to influence everyone. I can bet that there's 1% of someone in this world who will figure out this problem today.
If you can recognize that these things are true, I think it will make you, in general, as a person, as an individual, happier. Like, knowing that good things come from bad things. What we're going to talk about today is a book that I just recently read, and you know I don't like reading that many books, but it's called Same As Ever. And the reason why I shared it, I've been recommending it to all my friends, is because it's definitely confirmation bias, but I strongly believe that people don't really change, and that what we are interested in and how we behave doesn't really change. Now, our environment might change, like things around us are changing all the time, but we as people in general don't change, and society doesn't change around these critical factors. And so I started sharing with people because I started thinking to myself, like, this book kind of addresses so much of what I think is the source of disappointment, lack of satisfaction, possibly anger and frustration. Honestly, a lot of maybe lack of success. Like, lack of success is often, I think, personally inflicted. I don't think people realize that. And so I started sharing it around, and Stephanie, you were one of the first people I thought about, because you are often, I think, a very future oriented person, which is fine. There's nothing against being future oriented. And I always think to myself, because you often have differing opinions from me. So I did want to share this book with you. We're going to talk today, Same As Ever, Morgan Housel.
Yeah, when you shared this book with me, I was like, oh man, Albert's trying to dim my light. He's trying to put out my fire and make me go back to the mainstream normal things and just chill the fuck out. But then, no, when I started reading it, I will say the first couple chapters, I was like, okay, I don't know if I'm fully on board. But then when it started getting into how to view the world and the math behind things and probabilities and like how the world works, I was like, okay, I can get behind this book. So let's maybe go through some of your top takeaways, since I will admit I've only read 65% of the book. You've read 100% of the book. So I'm going to throw it over to you to start with some of your top takeaways.
Yeah. So I will start with this great little summary I found from a gentleman named Seeker, or I can't pronounce his name right, but Seeker writes. Anyways, it starts with saying, hey, listen, the laws of life, like what is true about life, and it's always been true and it's always will be true, which is like tech and medicine has changed. The geopolitical world makes no sense. Language and dialect, it can be completely foreign, but people are always going to fall for greed and fear just like they do in our current world, and that's always going to be there. When I read that, I thought to myself, I agree with all these things. These things are 100% true. Where I really started diving in and really enjoying it is that he does a really great job of pointing out how flawed, I guess, people are. Like, we as people are just so supremely flawed, but yet we are always looking for certainty. And we're always looking to experts for certainty. And what this book was a great reminder of to me is that nobody actually knows anything. And so when you overly base your happiness, your career, happiness typically comes from just a handful of things, career and family. That's basically it. Like, I'm serious. It's like your happiness is almost exactly lasered into those two things. Your career, your family, which generally helps you generate outcomes in your life. when people are really, really frustrated, it's often because they want to control things that they think can be changed or they think can be controlled. And what this book kind of hints at all the time is nobody knows anything. Nothing can be controlled. We are exactly who we are. And I just gravitated towards that because it kind of justifies, it really justifies anyone's point of view. That's what's interesting about to me. It's like, whether you have a point of view that's like slow and steady wins the race, or you have a point of view like Stephanie's, which is like wild, try things, be experimental, learn as much, try as many things as you can. This book kind of justifies any lifestyle you want, where it basically kind of centers like, hey, all of your personal frustration, it comes from yourself. It doesn't come from other people. It comes from yourself and some expectation of others that you don't have. And that's why I really enjoyed it, because it also says there is no such thing as a path to success. This doesn't exist. Like, anything that you do can become successful. This overwhelming pressure that people feel to be something that they're not or they're not doing, it's all self-inflicted. Like, that's why I like this book.
Yeah, I mean, he was talking about how previously, maybe back in the 50s, you only knew what was in your surroundings, your local community. And so that's all you had to be like, so-and-so's a banker, and that's great. Maybe I'll be a banker. Or if you were all poor, you all had fun being poor together and you didn't know any different. And he's like, and now that we've got social media and you can see what people are doing all around the world, for better or for worse, it can give you different expectations. And in some ways, I do think it's good. Like, in some oppressed countries, you've got women being able to be like, no, fuck this. I'm not going to be operating under this regime anymore. Like, I can go to a different place and get out of this. I just didn't know what I didn't know until I see that I can go in, like, across the border somewhere else and not be treated like that. So I think there are pros to having, like, just transparency around what's happening and be able to see, you know, different expectations. And it also can, you know, hurt if that's what you're looking towards like success of, like, that's what success looks like. And so, I mean, that's where it's interesting too, talking about who are you looking up to and who are you following, and how so many people he was talking about in this book really just look towards the most confident ones who say this is what you should be doing, say this is where the future's going, where the housing market is going, what stocks you should be investing in. Like, this is where the future is. And those people actually don't ever know where it's going. They're just the most articulate. So I loved his quote. It was something along the lines of, like, who might actually know the information that you're looking for? They just don't know how to articulate it. They don't know how to tell the story, but they might actually have some codes in there. They might have some information. They're just not the most confident ones because they don't know how to tell that story the right way. Which also was like, man, how many people are we looking at today and being like, oh, you know what you're talking about, just because of how they portray themselves, just because of the confidence, or they're on the news and they seem like they know what they're talking about.
It's a funny thing. So anyone who's ever pitched an idea, if you've ever pitched an idea that you want to start a business, you will find people that all of a sudden believe that they are experts in something that they know nothing about. If I were to tell 25 people randomly, or 25 people I knew, that I was going to start a flower business, you know, I always use flowers as my example, I know for a fact that some of them would tell me, like, that's a bad market, hey, it's very seasonal. Like, there was always going to be an opinion, right? And then when it comes to people, when for their own selves making decisions, they like what you just said. They like looking to what they believe is the experts. And when you find out and you really think about it, if you really think about it, expertise is nothing but consensus, meaning, or we confuse consensus with expertise. Oh, there's a bunch of people on the news that are saying this is true. Then it must be true, right? You start believing it. Or conversely, there's a bunch of people that say things that you believe to be false. And then for whatever reason, if you believe maybe one of the messengers is wrong, then all the messengers on that message are wrong. And so we often look to experts for things that we ourselves lack confidence in, yet we also as people often have confidence in things we know nothing about. And it's super weird. Like, and this is just how people are. And this is why, like, and I firmly believe this. When it comes to starting a business and or doing things next, like the next thing to do, I just don't think opinions matter that much. I really don't. I think because what happens is the result of what you follow is probably more based on who you ask rather than what should you do. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, you're just getting the opinions of random people. And he talks about how all of our opinions are based upon our experiences. So you're not really asking an expert at all. You're asking someone who has lived a life and has an opinion based upon what they've experienced, because it talks about how experiences play a bigger part in a person's life. For example, like we talked about, like a scarcity mindset. Everyone who lived through the Great Depression, because they experienced it, believed in saving and believed in the government kind of taking care of them, because they were also part of the Industrial Revolution and World War II time era, where in the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, infrastructure starts booming, everyone's aligned on a mission. So people from that area distrust banks, believe in saving, and also think the government will protect them, because that's what they experienced. Are they no wiser? They're not any wiser or that just is what they know. And so this is like asking people's opinions. You're not really asking about knowledge. You're asking about experience, which is weird because no one's experienced the future.
Oh, mic drop right there. I love that. I also think about how many really like brilliant people get deterred because of asking the wrong people. I mean, I love the example about the mathematician, and he's the one who, I mean, was brilliant, and he basically solved all these problems for the military and whatever else. And he said that he was getting
Nash.
Yeah, him. But people called him schizophrenic, which to me nowadays, I'm like, I just feel like the labeling of that, like those people might actually be hearing something from different universes and whatever that people here don't understand. So that's my take on that, of like labeling people with mental illnesses when they're just different. Might not have been a mental illness, because you've got some really smart mathematician who he said, you know what, I'm getting all these math codes from the universe. From aliens, like, I don't know, but they're entering into my head from somewhere, and it's not from within, it doesn't feel like. And people were like, he's crazy. He's schizophrenic.
They made a movie about John Nash. They made a movie about him, A Beautiful Mind, starring Russell Crowe. But for those who don't know, he developed and is the person behind game theory. But he also did go crazy and believe that he was here on secret missions to stop aliens from invading.
What if he was?
Maybe he was. I don't know. Well, it didn't come true.
Not yet. We don't know the future. I'm just like, how can we be so confident of being like, he's crazy? Like, maybe he's not. He's just so ahead of his time.
The best ideas, fortunately, unfortunately, it doesn't matter. They do often come from people who have a different view of the world. And so they can be, as Stephanie suggested, very quickly dismissed and or discounted, because it's so improbable to hear what they're saying. And what we talked about before, they don't have consensus. No one else thinks like them. Therefore, we confuse expertise and consensus all the time. All the time. And he's got really cool examples about how nobody talked about global pandemics, even though there were national pandemics, like SARS happened inside of Asia. There have been pandemics in the past, right? Like bubonic plague. But there was, and like some people had opinions on pandemics, but if you look at all the literature prior to 2020, he's like, there is nobody that predicted a pandemic. There's nobody that predicted a pandemic would ruin or change the economic outlook of the United States and or the world, right? No one saw this coming. And so, boom, the literature starts posting and everyone's like, oh, we should have seen that coming. Should have seen what coming? Like, we're not good at predicting the future. And that's what he was always saying, is like, the other thing is that the future has all, or unexpected things have always changed society, governments, life, country, whatever, right? It's always shaped by the unexpected. And yet we spend an unbelievable amount of time trying to prepare for the unexpected. But that's the problem, is that you can't predict things that are not expected. And so he has this really cool part where he talks about, in World War II, the United States suffered most of its casualties from the Battle of the Bulge. And he talks about, like, well, why, how did that happen? Like, the war was almost over. Like, why would we have suffered so many casualties there? It's like, because no one could predict that Hitler would attack us in that area.
It was so crazy.
Because it was so foreign. Like, there's no way he would do that, right?
You can't predict crazy. You can't predict huge, unexpected, catastrophic, super risky, like, things like that.
Yeah, and so I just like this book, because I kept thinking to myself as I was reading, like, this book is a great commentary for why people are unhappy. Because if you want to control the future, I got it's so hard. Just so hard.
Yeah. I mean, but then the one thing that came up for me was, in the beginning, the book started to me on a little bit of a like pessimistic, like you can't, at first I was like, yeah, I was like, geez, okay, your friend's dead. Now, like, no one can predict the future. All these things are coming and you can never predict it. And so on one side, I'm like, well, then why worry so much about the future? Why not just still be smart, make sure. But then also, don't be smart. I mean, he talked about all, you know, Disney, John Boyd, Elon Musk, like all the people. He's like, they never were worried about overstepping the boundaries of reality. And yes, it got them in trouble. Like Walt Disney's companies were on the verge of bankruptcy many times. Everyone hated John Boyd, even though he changed the, you know, airplane industry. Same thing with Elon Musk.
Yep. It's been, Tesla's been on the verge of bankruptcy many times.
Yeah. So then like when I got to that part of the book, I'm like, well, then why worry about it? Just do what you want to do. Take the risk that you want to take and, you know, do what you want to do.
That was the overwhelming thing. And one of the things that I often think about is like, so for example, Stephanie and I work together. We have very differing opinions in the world, but I think the reason why you and I can work together is in general, we might share our opinion, but we don't enforce our opinion. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't make you think my way. You don't make me think your way. What you do ask is that, hey, do you have ideas to help bring this to life?
Like, can you support me in this? Like, you might not like this, but can you bring your operational, structured mindset to help me with this thing that might work or might not?
It's a better question, because I also very much agree that while I don't think it will happen, I also don't know that it won't happen either. Like, you might be right. I've never said something certainly will work or fail. I think of things like likely. Will that likely happen? I don't know. This is the reason why I wanted to share this book with you, because I think it's a really great, first of all, I think you have to agree with many of his points, right? So if you agree with many of his points, what I think you start to see is that if you can recognize that these things are true, I think it will make you, in general, as a person, as an individual, happier. Like knowing that good things come from bad things, and also bad things come from good things. So Does Not Compute is one of his chapters, and it talks about there's most of the things that happen in the world don't seem to have any statistical data that leads up to that conclusion. So like the idea that you can, in numbers, predict the future.
Yeah, because you don't have enough data. He was essentially saying, like, if you're trying to predict a recession, and we've only ever had 7 recessions in like over however many 100+ years, like that's not really enough data to build any models and to be statistically significant. And so we don't know.
Yeah, and like in the reason why he talks about, like, the reason why we even have innovation to begin with is because we're fortunate enough to have people that don't trust data only. Like, they make their own opinions and bets on things that they see to be true, right? And so this is the sequence of chapters. Then it talks to, like, calm plants the seeds of crazy, which talks about, hey, listen, when things are quiet, that's when things go crazy, right? And we've heard that, I think, a lot. You've heard, like, hard men create good times. Good times create soft men. Soft men create hard times. You know, that cycle, right? So you can think of that cycle. But the idea is that good things kind of always happen after bad things. Like, so it's like we recognize things are bad. So instead of thinking, hey, so let's talk about, like, modern day, right? Hey, our government is too slow to build infrastructure. Hey, we don't invest enough in infrastructure, right? The Baltimore Bridge, like, when's that going to get done? High-speed rail in California, nothing gets done. Too many studies. Well, here's what's going to happen. There's going to be enough people that see that problem, and they're going to attack that problem. And we don't know what the answer is, but I bet something gets built. Because in the history of man, think about this, every time there's a massive, especially in developed nations, but even in undeveloped nations, whenever there is a massive infrastructure shortfall, guess what we've done?
We figured it out.
We've built. Every country has built.
And that's every problem. Like, anytime I ever hear people be like, AI, it's going to do this, and it's going to kill us all, and all these photo filters, and it's going to blah, blah, blah. Like, so much fear around all the problems that are going on. And I'm always like, I'm not worried, because I'm going to bet on humanity, because we have figured it out so many different times. And the feelings that people are feeling right now, we also felt when cars were coming out. We also felt, like, just so many different times for random reasons that now we would look back on and laugh. And so I'm like, I can just imagine us in 50 years looking back on this time frame and be like, why were we worried? We are very smart. We figure things out. It only takes 1% of the population to really figure something out to influence everyone. I think that it's like such a small amount. So I'm like, I can bet that there's 1% of someone in this world who will figure out this problem today.
So that's why I think it's important to identify problems. Certainly, you got to identify them. But I But I would say this, like, for anyone who's like, let's say, overly saddened. You're overly saddened sitting there, like, complaining. Like,
it's so hard to start a life. 1980s boomers had it so much easier.
Well, are you going to do something about this? Like, are you? Because if you're just going to complain, I got bad news for you. You don't get to know how long bad times last, and you don't get to know when good times will come. So what is your plan to do something better? Do you just plan to be in the mercy of government? Like, you're reading about interest. Because I see a lot of these TikToks, because I follow real estate, where people are complaining and saying, hey, boomers had it so much easier because they could afford a house off of a single family income back in 1980. And by percentage of income, it was less to buy a house. I'm like, okay, is that true? Maybe so. But guess what? Food, they showed, like, hey, food was also a greater percentage of income. Hey, commutes were a larger percentage of time. Access to information was much smaller. So, like, they had disadvantages too, right? So it's not like they only had advantages. Global travel didn't exist back in 1980s, global travel was saved and reserved for the wealthiest of the wealthy, okay? Like, you had to be rich to fly. I mean, not super rich, but you get it. I mean, you had to make good money. Like, most family vacations, and why they made movies about it, was like you and your family getting in a station wagon and going to the amusement park. Take a look at what average life was. So you got to say, like, there's trade-offs. Like, a lot of people are traveling and they're going, doing things. Like, we have cell phones, like a computer that connects to the world anywhere, whatever we want. We don't look at those things. Oh, the median house price relatives to income they were better for the people in the 1980s. Okay, that's probably true.
I don't want the rest of the 1980s. I mean, that's what he talked about that with humans too. It's like, I would look and be like, oh, Albert has this and this. And like, I want Albert's life.
Yes, he talks about you want parts, but not the whole thing.
I can't just choose, like, I want Albert's money and I want Albert's car, but I don't want his kids and I don't want his company. And I don't want to work 60 hours a week and I don't want this. Like, you either get all of that person's life or all of the 1980s, or you don't get any of it. You can't just be like, I just want the money. Or I just want the fun, but I don't want to do the work.
I just want housing prices relative to incomes to be the same as 1980. But things have changed since 1980. I don't know why you think that this should be like that. There was also more greenfield, right? Land was relatively cheaper because there was more of it. There's way more people now. And so the other thing that finally I'll say is houses have also gotten substantially bigger. Like, people are building huge houses now, which is why the median house price has pushed up so high. Like, I think the average median house, the median house in 1980, I looked this up, was under 1,000 square feet, whereas the median single-family house being built today, they're being constructed, are over 2,600 square feet. So they're way bigger. They're way bigger. So what's become a starter home? A starter home's become a townhome. But there are still townhomes relative to percentage of income that a person making the average median salary in America could afford, but you choose not to buy it. You choose to complain. Like, bitch. It's changed. Like, townhomes are now what you have to buy. Because guess what? Prior to 1980, also people didn't get to buy single family homes. So it's like, what are we, like, it's a very small window of time where people were fortunate enough to get those housing prices. But as you said, they also had the other things they didn't have. So you got to look at, you know, your woo-woo positivity is, well, what do you have? Because there's an abundance of things that we have right now that in 1980 did not exist.
I mean, I do think when I look at people who look back and complain or are constantly envious of other things, that is when I bring my woo-woo self in. So I'm like, okay, you're literally attracting more of that lack, scarcity, wah-wah, I'm a victim. I can't change my life. I'm just going to sit here and complain about people who are. And like, the more you're putting that out into the universe, is the more you're going to keep receiving those same stories and the same circumstances. Like, you won't be able to get out of it. And so I do think, like, having your expectations and excitement set towards what you get to change and what you actually want, instead of looking around and complaining about a past or someone else having more than you. Like, I do think your mindset really does impact everything around you. So, and like, look at most of those people who are complaining. I don't see them. They're not the ones changing the world. They're not the ones that I see like, wow, no, they're not the wild minds. They're the minds who are trying to slow down the wild minds. They're the ones labeling the wild minds as schizophrenic. They're the ones who are like, whoa, whoa, slow down. You can't go fast because I can't go fast.
They're the ones confusing consensus with expertise. Like, 99.9% of businesses fail. It's like, yeah, what's your point?
They're the ones getting on the media being like, this stock's going to win. Crypto's going to plummet. And I actually love tracking the people who are so confident, like in these certain groups that I'm in around we're going to be in a recession. There's two different people who said we were going to be in a recession by January 2024. Like, and their whole group was in consensus of this because this one figurehead was basically saying it. And then we get to January, and this is 2 years ago. Yeah. I put an alarm on my calendar where I said, when I heard this, I was like, in 2 years, remind me that so-and-so said we're going to be in a recession and see if he's right. And then I get my reminder, like January 14th, so-and-so said we're going to be in a recession. We were not. We are not.
Ask any economist. If you ask 100 economists what's going to happen, you're going to get 100 different answers. Or like, especially the time, because really markets going to do two things. They're going to improve, you know, worsen or stay the same. So, but you ask, when will this happen? A bust is coming. When? When's it coming? Right? And so like a good example is the commercial real estate right now is becoming a problem because of the amount of vacancies. Return to work hasn't quite happened like they did. You know, people wanted it to happen. People are, employees are definitely putting up a lot of friction and resistance to coming back to office. I don't know if we'll ever return to the office like we did pre-pandemic. So right now there's a problem. And of course that problem is that commercial real estate is really, really vacant. But here's what's going to happen. People are going to default. People are going to be desperate to sell, and they are going to sell to some innovators who are going to figure out what to do with that space. That is exactly what's going to happen, right? They're going to get converted to apartments. They're going to be converted to retail stores. They're something, but like the industry is not going to disappear. Like, oh, commercial real estate will never exist again. Like, I don't think that's true at all. It might have a different purpose. It might not be as lucrative. Well, how about this? The current way you do things today won't be lucrative tomorrow. That might be true. I think that's likely to be true. But go away, what's that mean? I don't know what go away means. It's going to change.
The other thing from this book that I thought was very relatable to no matter what you're doing, what space you're in, I thought that this was really good about just the best story wins and how he just talked about the power of story and how that is what influences essentially everything. Everything you listen to, all the movements, all the kind of marketing and all of that. And it was cool hearing the different examples about, okay, you've got, you know, different authors who have best-selling books. The content in their books has been around for decades. It's all well-known. It's just how they put the story in there. Or this movie that was a hit. Everyone knew about World War II or whatever, the Civil War. But it's how he put music and built the story around that concept that made it, you know, become the top movie of that decade or whatever. Like, everything is about story. And it made me stop and be like, how are we telling our stories right now in a way that don't resonate with others? How can we switch that up? And what stories am I listening to just because it's a good story? And it might not even be real. So it was like, that had me go into a lot of thoughts about mission, what we're doing here, who we're attracting, but then also like just in the world, who am I listening to right now just because they're a good storyteller?
Yeah, well, so his example he used for a book was Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari. I believe that's how you pronounce the name. Like, someone criticized him, like, well, you like have learned nothing new about humans. Like, you didn't find anything. It's like so if you're not familiar, Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind is a book which I have listened to. It basically talks about human history, like from when we were possibly Neanderthals to like harvesting food then to, you know, building. How did we then figure out how to, hunt? How did we figure out to build communities? How did we figure out to govern ourselves? How did we figure out currency all the way to modern day humanity? And so someone said like, well, this is just like all these things are in different textbooks and you've discovered nothing new. It's like, yeah, but I told the story better than you. That's why. And even though it's like a factual story, Brief History of Humankind, why did it sell 45 million copies? Well, sometimes, like you said, Stephanie, the better story can be many things, easier to read, more to the punch, straight to the point, or whatever people describe, more emotional. This book's not emotional. I wouldn't say that for this one, but you get the idea. Is there's a lot of ways to twist it so that people want to consume it again. There was the movie about World War II. It was what he cited. But I always think about Apollo 13 as one of my favorite movies. Apollo 13, if you haven't seen it, is a movie about the space mission of Apollo 13, which went to space. It was supposed to go to the moon. The ship basically broke down in outer space And it was a mad dash of scientists to figure out how do we get these guys back to Earth safely. And it is a historical event. They did all get back to safety. So you already know the answer. So how is that movie suspenseful? How could you tell that story in a suspenseful way that gets people fired up to see it and learn about it? And so that has always been true about humans, is we, history pre-writing was told by the village elder who was the best at explaining what happened. And that's, in fact, all we knew. And yes, same as it ever was. The best story is the one you can hear, recite, and remember. And that it gets proven time and time again, too.
Yeah, I also loved, I think there was two pieces to it where I think the way to tell stories also changes depending on the generations and what they're looking for. And so that's one thing I was thinking about, is like storytelling, while important, I think the structure can kind of change over time depending on what's going to resonate. But then I also liked like staying true to your own storytelling and his Martin Luther King example, where he had his script and his written, you know, speech, and he got up there and started saying it and no one was really that moved. And then basically someone's like, yo, talk about your dream.
Talk about the dream, man. Talk about the dream. And he takes the speech and throws it to the side and starts going, I have a dream. And he, and that's where, and so it's like, dang, like, so he was just kind of going.
Yeah. So it's like staying true to like, no, this one actually feels better to me. So it's like this interesting mix of do you, and if it's not resonating though, if you're like, I have this great thing and no one's listening, I have this amazing company, this amazing product, you know, whatever you're trying to do, and it's not resonating, it actually might be great. That was also what I took away from it, which maybe you and I might not agree, because I know you're like, if something doesn't grow quick enough, then no one wants it.
No,
I've heard you say that before, of like,
well, I mean, I think sometimes data will, I often say, sales will suggest, like, are you on the right path? It doesn't guarantee it, but like, there's plenty of people that grow low and slow. But if your expectation is to multiply fast, then data will tell you very quickly, like, you're probably not, this is probably not the way. Because what's interesting in this book is also talks about is like, time is actually your great, and compounding has always been proven true, is that, hey, if you can stick at something for a really long time, you will A, be very good at it, or B, you'll probably be more successful at it. I believe that to be true too. It's only that the idea of like looking at it is only in short-term windows, which is unfortunately how like a lot of publicly traded companies operate. They need the data to show that it's going to work very quickly. And that's also why most innovations don't come from the biggest companies. They come from small guys who have bigger time horizon. They don't have shareholders that are like, hey, where's my ROI on this right now?
I like the visual of the tree that he gave, where he was like, okay, you have a tree in a forest and the little tree sprouts are coming up and they grow underneath their mama tree, and they grow very slow. They don't have a bunch of direct sun and they're just slowly growing over the years. And by growing so slowly is what allows them to be healthy and have a really stable trunk. And like, that's preferred. If you put a tree out in the middle of a field, it's going to grow super quick because it's going to have so much direct sun and it's going to be all on its own. And then it's going to die really quickly because it's not going to have the stability. That's what causes rot and fungus and like all these problems. Yeah, and I'm like, what a good visual to be like, you know what? I'm here for slow, sustainable, good old growth. I don't need to rocket ship all the time. And some people need to. So
that's the beauty. And I think the lessons in between the chapters is like, you really start seeing like, because nobody knows anything, like that's the underlying, because nobody knows what the future actually holds. And everyone's view of expertise is only for what has happened up until now. What you've experienced and what's happened till now. And since you can't predict the future, and that life, and it's proven time and time again that huge changes in society, shifts, are things that are typically unexpected. So you can't predict the future. You know what you know now. And these things are true. And so it doesn't really matter how you want to live. There's probably a way, there's probably evidence that your style has succeeded. So that further suggests, like, hey, then maybe you should just do what you are absolutely the most happiest with. And stop listening to other people, because that's where disappointment comes from. Disappointment comes from listening to other people that kind of break it down.
The one thing I wanted to end on too is a kind of a positive note, because it talks about listening to people and probabilities and numbers. And in there, it says something along the lines of like, life is about managing probabilities in an uncertain and probabilistic world. But then he goes into, there's a lot of bad probabilities out there, you know, just things that you can look at and be like, oh my gosh, the world's ending for sure, housing crisis, blah, blah, blah. But then he goes into, if you do believe some of those numbers or you look at them, then why not also believe in miracles? And he talks about, people talk about that, you know, it's, you experience one miracle per million, like you, a miracle is meant to happen for every 1 million events or something like that. Like, that's what most people say. It's like a 1 in a million event. And he's like, well, you have 30,000 events happening every single day. And so you should expect at least one miracle to happen to you per month. Like, you should have that expectation because that is a probability. One amazing, unexpected, beautiful thing should happen once a month for you just because of probabilities. And so that was like a nice way for me to think about it, because there are so many bad probabilities, that some of which could be true, and you're always hedging your risk and your bets and your investments and blah, blah, blah. But how often are you also expecting something like that, a miracle, knowing that?
I expect it every time I play Lotto. I buy Lotto tickets all the time. I'm like, yo, here it is.
I expect it every time I buy a random crypto coin, like the Cock and You coin that I sent you. I'm like, you know what? I bought some, this thing's going up. And I don't know when, but also just saying I own this coin is just funny now. But yeah, I love just the idea of like, expect miracles as well. You don't have to worry all the time without also balancing it with like, good things are coming my way. The world is rigged in my favor, and I'm going to wait for that as well.
The parts that resonated most with me, actually, I'll give you some flowers, Stephanie. I think you embody these quite well. I think I'm not as good at this, but there's a chapter where he talks about it's supposed to be hard. Like, whoever told you life is supposed to be easy sold you a lie. Like, I don't know why and whoever would convince themselves that life's just a way where you just go to college and you have fun and then you get a job and you're always growing an income and you can always buy all the things that you want and nothing bad will ever happen to you. And so it's supposed to be hard. And then he talks about later on in the chapters is it's harder than it looks. It's never as fun as it seems. So meaning like when you look over there at some guy who's having the life that you want, no one ever thinks like, wow, that person probably also did hard things and they probably didn't have fun doing them. And I think, you know, to hand Stephanie some flowers, she's gone through some things that I think, yeah, I mean, I get mad about water damage in my townhouse. Like, that ain't nothing. It's nothing. Stephanie's gone through real things. And other people have gone through things substantially harder than Stephanie or I have gone through, right? Physical illness, born with disability. You're like, maybe you got, there's a lot of things that can happen to people. And so this pain or psychology that we put on ourselves of like, oh, my life's not good enough. It's not happening fast enough. It's not, something's not enough, right? It's all a lie to yourself. Like, you've somehow, how did you convince yourself that something was supposed to be easy? Basically, life is hard.
And if you can lie to yourself that way, why don't you lie to yourself the other way? I mean, that's how I think the best way to get out of hard things is to lie to yourself, because half the time your brain is lying to you anyways, telling you how terrible, hard, blah, blah, blah. Like, why not tell yourself a different story? And just, I mean, I think that can be helpful of like, you can either let your mind get caught up in like how terrible things are, but you also fast forward 20 years, you might look back at this time right now and view this time as the best time of your life and be like, damn, why didn't I like enjoy that more? Like, so you don't know, you could be in the best time of your life right now today. And you'll be 70 looking back in 2024 and being like, man, that was a good year. Like, that was so fun. I look back at so many bad years and I'm like, thank you. Like, now I am so I'm really so grateful. I'm like, I am so unfuckwithable now. Like, I cannot be messed with because of that year. That one right there. Thank you for sending me that. God, universe, source.
I'm still learning. I'm still learning because I definitely get mad when bad things happen, but it is true. Like, you can, if you can believe things are certain to be terrible, why can't you believe that they're certain to succeed? Because this is just as likely.
It's up to you. Yep.
There you go. Well, if you liked what we talked about today, the name of the book is Same as Ever. It's a nice short read. It's just full. There's a part where he talks about like complexity and like how most books are like excessively long evidence to prove just one point the author has. It's pretty funny he says that because the book is short, which is also why I like it, because I feel like, it's loaded with examples. He's got these points loaded with examples. Of course they support his point. No author puts in examples that don't support their point. But it's a good read. And I'd suggest anyone who's ever trying to like, I don't know, get a grasp of life, just read it and just be like, oh, literally what you're experiencing is the same as it ever was. And I don't know. I just liked it a lot.
Yeah. Thanks for recommending. I definitely liked it too. I will finish my last 30%. I was listening to it on 2.5 speed to try and download all the information and code before getting to this interview today. But definitely a really good book. And I'm glad to have read it. And I probably will go back and read it a second time because I think I'm going to pull out different pieces of insights and thoughts or thought bubbles just from going through it a second time. Because the first time around, I feel like I picked up on my more woo, spiritual, oh, miracles, oh, this.
Or you might have written something off because you thought it was negative.
Yeah, I know. And I certainly do. I'm like, doesn't resonate. No, thank you. But I'm down to go back and explore for a second time as well, because I do think that's a lot of times when even more nuggets come out of a book.
There you go. Same as ever, Morgan Housel. If you like this episode, click like, subscribe, follow, whatever platform you're on. I have no clue what you're consuming right now. It allows Stephanie to continue to woo. It allows us to read and give you reviews on these books. And it allows us to keep sharing what we're doing at Mission as we attempt to climb out of, well, we're climbing pretty good now, I feel like.
So whatever story we want to tell.
Exactly. Like what I like the way you framed it, because I said, oh, our runway is this long. Like, you're like, that's
great.
Pretty good.
It's fucking awesome.
Did I just say it was bad?
No, that's awesome. I was like, God.
Because you're like, yeah, because this runway is way longer than what the runway was 2 years ago.
We're crushing it here. So with that, go us and go you, listener, whoever's tuning in today.